Greetings, listeners. This is VK3OTN, the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old-Timers Club of Australia, with this month's news and information bulletin for members and friends of the club for April 2024. I am Andrew, a VK3 Charlie Alpha Hotel. Details on when to hear the news and information bulletins are available at the club's website, www.raotc.org.au. VK3OTN is available on a wide range of radio platforms, HF, VHF and UHF, along with 2-metre repeaters, amateur television, DMR, that is digital mobile radio, and D-Star. These news broadcasts are available for download for up to 6 months, just in case you missed the original news broadcast from the RAOTC website. Just put RAOTC into your favourite search engine. If you'd like to contact the club, then why not send us an email? Our address is raotc@raotc.org.au. I hope you enjoy this month's news broadcast. Welcome to the April 2024 edition of RAOTC Club News. Most members should now have the latest edition of Old Timers News, the Journal of the RAOTC. Following the retirement of our former editor, Bill Roper, VK3BR, because of health problems, Tim, VK3YBP, did the laying up and desktop publishing of the latest edition of Old Timers News. He was ably assisted by an editorial team. A special word of thanks goes out to our administrative officer, Jim, VK3ZKK, who was tireless in bringing the whole team together. Please send articles to the RAOTC email, raotc@raotc.org.au. Jim will guide the articles through the publication process and keep track of them. We need articles for the September edition of OTN. September will be upon us sooner than we expect. There is a lot of work preparing articles for publication and getting the authors to approve the finished products prior to publication. The RAOTC committee met on March 7 via a Zoom teleconference with members spread all across Australia, and it was good to see so many faces. Mike Alsop, a VK8MA from Catherine, attended and accepted a position on committee. He was co-opted to the committee. If he likes us, he will present himself for election at the September 2024 Annual General Meeting. Some listeners will recall that Mike has been experimenting with transmitting the broadcast on 10 metres, with remarkably good results. Meanwhile, here in Melbourne, David, VK3AWX, now transmits the broadcast on 20 metres. Hopefully both of these arrangements will be on an ongoing basis. March Melbourne Luncheon. The luncheon was held at the Caulfield RSL on Thursday the 21st of March. The guest speaker was RAOTC Secretary, Treasurer and Membership Officer Mike Good, VK3BDL. Mike enlightened those attending about operating ham radio when travelling overseas. The most important part of his presentation was how to keep your XYL or old man on side when you go on holiday, so you can also include your amateur radio activities. Mick, a VK3CH, made a video recording of the previous luncheon presentation and also recorded this one. It is now on YouTube for those who are unable to attend to enjoy. The link is on the club's website and is easy to find. It was pleasing to see quite a few guests. One thing to make a note of is that if you're booking for guests, kindly let us know their names at the time of paying. This will enable us to make some name tags for them. Please send details to the RAOTC email at raotc@raotc.org.au. This time the people attended didn't hurry away and stayed to chat. Many members like to catch up with other amateurs and their guests twice a year at our luncheons. There was probably around 15 or so people remaining when I left at around 15:30. Three committee members did an experimental test after the luncheon using Zoom teleconferencing and the equipment and facilities at the Caulfield RSL. The tests were quite successful. They were to make preparation for holding a hybrid Zoom and live AGM at the September luncheon. The hybrid meeting will enable members from all over Australia to attend the next AGM and to see the members who are in attending the AGM in person on their computer screens. Members are invited to pencil September 19 in their diary for the September Melbourne luncheon and AGM. It's anticipated a short AGM will be held just prior to the luncheon. You will need to register to receive the Zoom login details. They won't be published in ATN or on the website to ensure that only members join the meeting. Stand by for further details. Class licensing. The last time I spoke, I mentioned the countdown to the introduction of the class license. Well, February 19 came and went, and the ionosphere still seems to be propagating. I took up the offer from the ACMA to apply for a refund of part of my license fees, and I sent off an email as instructed. ACMA wrote back and invited me to submit a form to receive the refund of around $42 via electronic funds transfer, which I promptly attended to. I filled out the form, printed it, signed it, scanned it back in, and emailed it back to them. On March 5, a cheque for the amount was received via Australia Post. Not too sure what the EFT form was all about. One committee member received a form to fill in to have his refund paid into the bank account, together with a letter advising that the refunds would not be made by cheque. Included in the same letter was the refund cheque. Something about the left hand not knowing what the right hand is doing. However, the plot thickens. It would seem that as your licence expires, or is surrendered as in my case, you disappear from the ACMA call sign register. You no longer exist. There is another portal that you can go to where you can enter a call sign and it will tell you if it is allocated or available for issue. If it's not available, it's allocated, and you can see what class it is, Foundation, Standard or Advanced. That's about the only information you get. There is no names, postcodes, addresses or any other detail whatsoever. What a wonderful system we now seem to have. Fellow committee member Peter VK8ZZ made a comment on the National WA News broadcast on March 10. I have included it after the club news. New members. Today I am pleased to welcome the following new members to the ROTC. John Fisher, VK3DQ, became full member number 1865. Jean Fisher, VK3VIP, became associate member number 1866. Peter Van Volk, VK3CQC, has become full member number 1867. Ian Fleming, VK6KIF, has become full member number 1868. And finally, George Kozlowski, VK3GWK, has become full member number 1869. Silent keys. It is with regret I report the following silent key. Bob Kroll, VK3CDV, ROTC member number 1588, became a silent key on the 1st of March 2024. Let us pause a moment in memory of our departed colleague. Members are reminded that the very latest club news is available via the ROTC website. Put ROTC into your favourite search engine to find it. www.rotc.org.au. The next broadcast I'll be presenting is due to take place on Monday, the 3rd of June, 2024. However, next month there will be another historical broadcast from years past, presented by Alan Dable, VK3AMD, who's now Silent Key. And that's about all the club news we have for you at this time.
This is Peter, VK8ZZ. The current database used by the Australian Communications and Media Authority to record amateur licences is no longer being used for individual and club call signs, now that we have moved to a class licence. The ACMA have ruled out maintaining any such database for amateurs in Australia. I have been contacted by many dissatisfied amateurs that have written to their local federal member to request the reinstatement of the amateur call signs in the ACMA Register of Radio Licences database. Whilst the board do not have any formal position, I too have written to my local federal member urging them to reinstate this essential service. The Wireless Institute of Australia are now looking at producing a call book for use by amateurs. The last call book was printed over 5 years ago, and we would like to hear from amateurs as to the method to be utilised for inclusion or exclusion of details in the call book. Such things as, should we include an amateur's name? Should we exclude an address? Should we just include a postcode? The amateur licence level of proficiency? Should it be an opt-in or an opt-out model? Please send your thoughts for consideration to the secretary at wia.org.au.
You are listening to VK3OTN and associated relay stations. VK3OTN is the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club Australia Incorporated, with the monthly news and information bulletin for members and friends of the club.
This month we have several interesting technical articles for you. First up is Clive Wallace, VK6CSW, who poses the question, was Marlon Loomis the first wireless telegrapher? This will be followed by two shorter articles. The first one is read by Bill Roper, VK3BR, who tells us about an article that was drawn to Bill's attention by Ron, VK3AFW, regarding some new medical techniques and uses of radio waves. The article appeared in RADCOM, the journal of the RSGB. And finally, if you think that interference is a problem these days, well, unfortunately, it's been around a little while. It's back over to Clive Wallace, who will tell us about QRM back in 1903. I hope you enjoy these rather interesting articles. All of them were broadcast over 10 years ago. So now, let's pass it over to Clive, VK6CSW.
Was Marlon Loomis the first wireless telegrapher? This item is by Bill, VK3BR. If asked who invented wireless communication, most people in the Western world would reply Marconi. However, even today, disputes persist as to the true inventor of wireless. When looking into this topic, Bill came across claimants whose names he'd never heard of before. Names such as the Indian scientist Jagadish Chandra Bose, New Zealander Ernest Rutherford, German physicist Carl Ferdinand Braun, American inventors Nathan Stubblefield, Amos Dolbear, and the American dentist Marlon Loomis. Of these, Loomis seems to have the most genuine claim. This is what Bill writes. Before we look at Loomis's work, first let us look at why most of us automatically think of Marconi as the inventor of wireless communication. From about 1900 until 1943, in both Britain and the United States, there were a large number of patent rights battles going on in the courts. In 1901, Tesla was granted US patent 685012, for the means of increasing the intensity of electrical oscillations. But in 1904, the US Patent Office reversed its decision and awarded Marconi the patent for radio. Tesla then began his fight to reacquire the patent, but was still unsuccessful at the time of his death in January 1943, at the age of 86. It was too late for Tesla, but a few months after his death, the US Supreme Court reversed its decision again, effectively recognizing Tesla as the inventor of radio. However, during the early 1900s, Marconi had established a consortium of powerful British investors, several of whom were members of Parliament. As a result, it seems that other inventors and researchers were effectively silenced by governmental actions, allowing the Marconi Company to dominate the wireless scene. Then, a patent war broke out. Marconi's list of patent fights over the ensuing years included almost all of the inventors and pioneers of radio communications. People like De Forest, Fleming, and others were in an almost constant fight with Marconi and his company. From what Bill can gather, the British government didn't want to aid those fighting these lengthy patent battles against the British-based Marconi Company. Therefore, they insisted that Marconi was the inventor of radio, and this unfortunate misconception seems to have stuck over the years, despite later events. As with almost any event in history, the invention of a process is seldom attributable to any one person. Even though Marconi played an important role in the development of wireless, so did many others. So who was the first person to invent radio? This is the story of Marlon Loomis, a dentist by profession, but inventor by choice, whom many believe was the first. After all, his patent was issued before Marconi was even born. On the 20th of February, 1864, Marlon Loomis wrote in his journal, "I have been for years trying to study out a process by which telegraphic communications may be made across the ocean without any wires, and also from point to point on the earth, dispensing with wires." 2.5 years later, in October 1866, Marlon Loomis successfully demonstrated what he called wireless telegraphy between two mountaintops in Loudoun County, West Virginia. 8 years before Marconi was born, Loomis was able to make a meter connected to one kite cause another distant one to move, marking the first known instance of wireless aerial communication. Loomis's claim to recognition as the inventor of radio is based on a series of experiments he did in the Blue Ridge Mountains area of West Virginia in October 1868, 6 years before the birth of Marconi. Marlon Loomis's apparatus was simple. He established two stations on separate mountain tops, 29 kilometers apart. At each station was a galvanometer, a kite covered with a 5-inch square grid of fine copper wire gauze, and 600 feet, or 183 meters, of copper wire acting as the kite string to fly the kite. The people conducting the experiment with Loomis had their watches set, and at a predetermined interval, they grounded the wire, which ran through the galvanometer to the transmitting kite. Loomis noted that the galvanometer of the receiving kite deviated each time the transmitting kite's copper wire string was grounded. This experiment was repeated several times, causing the needles on the galvanometers to deflect every time the circuit was completed. Sometimes there were problems with the communication system. It seemed that if one of the kites was at the wrong height, the system would not work. This led Loomis to believe that there were different areas in the atmosphere and, depending upon which area you were in, this would control whether the communication would work or not. There were even days when the system just would not work at all. However, among the witnesses to his initial experiment were Senator Pomeroy of Kansas and Congressman Bingham of Ohio, both of whom became supporters of Loomis in his attempt to get federal money to establish his discovery commercially. The commercial possibilities of this discovery were immediately apparent, but Loomis quickly understood that if he wanted to make longer distance transmissions without increasing the size of the kites and their copper gauze grids, it would be necessary to develop a more sensitive detector than the galvanometer. Nevertheless, Loomis successfully repeated the experiment in 1868, this time demonstrating his system of wireless communication to a group of congressmen and eminent scientists. His work became a matter of controversy in Congress when the senator from Massachusetts introduced a bill in 1869 to appropriate $50,000 to support Loomis's work. For 2 years, the bill was tied up in committee, possibly because of opposition from existing telegraph corporations who didn't like the idea of this type of competition. In 1870, in experiments funded by the US Navy, Loomis successfully transmitted telegraphic signals between two ships 3.2 kilometers apart on Chesapeake Bay. On the 20th and 21st of May, 1872, a lengthy discussion of the Loomis Bill took place in the House of Congress. The issue of appropriations had been removed, and only the issue of incorporation remained. Nevertheless, in that year, Loomis was granted U.S. Patent 129971 for a wireless telegraph. The newspapers became extremely active on the Loomis issue, but unfortunately, the majority of them were not favorable to the concept of wireless communication. Their reports ranged from polite skepticism to outright ridicule and allegations of Loomis being a fraud. In January 1873, Congressman Bingham introduced a bill in the House of Representatives to incorporate the Loomis Aerial Telegraph Company, but with no monetary appropriations attached. On the 6th of January 1873, the Loomis Bill was brought to a vote in the Senate and passed by 29 votes to 12. 5 days later, the bill was signed into law by President Grant, thus incorporating the Loomis Aerial Telegraph Company. But without the $50,000 appropriation, Loomis was unable to commercially develop his system of communication. There are those today who still claim that the refusal by Congress to provide the necessary funding kept Loomis from developing a wireless communication system 2 decades before Marconi. During the later years of his life, Loomis, who incidentally invented false teeth, returned to dentistry apparently only in order to get some more capital to further his electrical and communications experiments. It's claimed that in the late 1870s he succeeded over a distance of 32 kilometers. In this experiment, he erected steel masts on top of wooden towers and reportedly maintained fairly reliable communications for periods of months at a time. The actions of Marlon Loomis did not catch the attention of the world, as did the experiments and successes of those that followed. Like so many others, he was ahead of his time, preceding the work of Marconi and Popov by at least 20 years. But who knows? Perhaps the whole history of radio would have been quite different if only Loomis had obtained his $50,000 funding. However, unless further historical research turns up someone else who has a prior claim, it would seem that Marlon Loomis does perhaps deserve recognition as the first real inventor of radio. What do you think?
Thank you, Clive. You're listening to VKE3OTN with the monthly news and information session for RAOTC members. And now to a small item, proceed from an article published in the November-December 2012 issue of Radio Comms, which illustrates just some of the incredible things being achieved with radio waves. And this item was supplied by Ron, VK3AFW. It's entitled, Wireless Power Reaches the Heart. The feasibility of a super small implantable cardiac device that gets its power not from batteries but from radio waves has been demonstrated by a team of engineers at Stanford. The implanted device is contained in a cube just 0.8 of a millimeter on a side and could fit on the head of a pin. The radio waves are transmitted from a small power device on the surface of the body. The researchers found that the maximum power transfer through human tissue occurs at about 1.7 gigahertz, much higher than previously thought. At the optimal frequency, a millimeter radius coil is capable of harvesting more than 50 microwatts of power, well in excess of the needs of a recently demonstrated 8 microwatt pacemaker. The team found that the receiving and transmitting antennas had to be optimally oriented to achieve maximum efficiency. Differences in alignment of just a few degrees could produce troubling drops in power. The team responded by designing an innovative slotted transmitting antenna structure. It delivers consistent power efficiency regardless of orientation of the two antennas. The new design focuses the radio waves precisely at the point inside the body where the implanted device rests on the surface of the heart, increasing the electric field where it is needed most, but cancelling it elsewhere. This helps reduce overall tissue heating to levels well within the IEEE standards.
Thanks very much, Bill.
You are listening to VK3OTN and associated relay stations. VK3OTN is the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club, Australia, Incorporated, with the monthly news and information bulletin for members and friends of the club.
Marconi and the Magician, QRM back in 1903, an abridged and slightly revised version of the story by Paul Edwards, VK7ZAK, first published in the March 2012 OTN magazine. The British astronomer, the Reverend Dr. Neville Maskelyne, who died in 1811, was the fifth astronomer royal and is best remembered for his founding of the Nautical Almanac, used by seafarers for celestial navigation, and which continues to be published to this day. 92 years after the death of the Reverend Doctor, another Neville Maskelyne, born in 1863, was at the centre of a scientific dispute involving large amounts of money. This latter-day Neville Maskelyne was the son of well-known magician John Neville Maskelyne. The occasion was a lecture demonstration on electric resonance and wireless telegraphy given in June 1903 by Professor Ambrose Fleming at London's prestigious Royal Institution in Piccadilly. Fleming, a consultant to the Marconi Company and popular science speaker of the time, was well launched into his lecture when his assistant, Mr. Arthur Block, noticed that the Morse telegraph printer, ready to take messages from the Marconi station some 250 miles away at Poldhu in Cornwall, in the west of England, and relayed via Cheltenham, some 85 miles southwest of London, was already in action. To his astonishment, the assistant heard the words RATS being spelt out repeatedly from the printer. While Fleming, who was hard of hearing and oblivious to this derogatory comment arriving via the mysterious ether, continued his lecture, his assistant was treated to a longer message. There was a young fellow from Italy who diddled the public quite prettily. This was followed by quotations from Shakespeare, all recorded on the paper tape continuing to spill out from the printer. Fleming's lecture demonstration, intended to address concerns about the security from eavesdropping and the freedom from crosstalk of the Marconi system, was judged a success by the daily press. However, when Fleming was informed of the interference several days later, he was not amused. He rather huffily wrote to the Times newspaper, deploring these monkeyish pranks and scientific hooliganisms, terms which his students at University College London were quick to repeat when out of Fleming's earshot. Fleming angrily requested information from readers regarding the identity of the perpetrators of this outrage against the traditions of the Royal Institution. The information was not long in coming. During the lecture, Fleming's assistant had noticed the amused face of Dr. Manders, an associate of inventor and magician Neville Maskelyne, a fierce critic and public detractor of Marconi. In a letter to the Times published a fortnight later, Maskelyne proudly accepted responsibility. Maskelyne wrote, "We have been led to believe that Marconi messages are proof against interference. The recent so-called Marconi triumphs have been all in that direction. Professor Fleming himself has vouched for the reliability and efficiency of the Marconi syntony. The object of his lecture was to demonstrate this, so no one can complain if we proceed to put those statements to the test." In another letter to the Electrician magazine, a well-regarded periodical of the day, Maskelyne noted that he could easily have sabotaged the lecture but had instead decided to simply demonstrate in a responsible manner the shortcomings of the Marconi tuning system known as Syntony. Fleming's pompous response had played right into his hands. Maskelyne's broadband spark gap transmitter was, in fact, located in the nearby Egyptian Hall, a West End theatre owned by his father and used by both of them for performances of magic. In the public discussion of the Marconi wireless system following the Fleming lecture, Maskelyne admitted to eavesdropping on the Poldhue Thunder Factory transmissions using a Maskelyne receiver of his own design. He had discovered that the 37 kilowatt or 50 horsepower Poldhue station managed to transmit at only 2.5 words per minute. He scornfully pointed out that had the same power been applied to a motor car, the messages would have arrived at the Cheltenham relay station just as quickly by road. Despite Fleming's repeated attempts to discredit him, Maskelyne clearly won the battle that was waged in the technical and popular press. Fleming lost his job with Marconi's, but was reinstated 2 years later following his invention of the thermionic diode. Marconi, of course, went on to win the commercial war against his opponents, despite this embarrassing skirmish with Maskelyne the magician. It is unclear if Neville Maskelyne, gifted magician, inventor and radio pioneer, was related to the Astronomer Royal's family, the Maskelynes of Purton in Wiltshire, but he was the first person to demonstrate the detonating of explosives by radio and of radio communication from balloons, achieving a distance of 10 miles between balloon and ground station in 1900. Paul, VK7ZAS, the author of this article, admits to a personal interest in the Maskelynes. He is a first cousin, six generations removed, of Dr. Neville Maskelyne, the fifth Astronomer Royal.
Thanks very much, Clive.
You are listening to VK3OTN and associated relay stations. VK3OTN is the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club, Australia Incorporated, with the monthly news and information bulletin for members and friends of the club.
Perf Luncheons. The popular and well-attended monthly luncheons for ROTC members and friends in and around the Perf area are held on the second Tuesday of each month. The VK6 ROTC group have a new venue, the Woodbridge Hotel, east of Guildford. Reports indicate the hospitality to be excellent. The Perf group meet at 11:30 a.m. for lunch at 12 midday. This is not a buffet meal, but excellent food in both pensioner and standard portions are available. We would like to place orders at 12 midday, so please don't be late. This information is courtesy of Phil, VK6ZKO, whose contact details can be found on the club's website. In keeping with tradition, we'll finish this broadcast with a short, humorous story. So here's a short story this month. A mother and a son were waiting at a bus stop. Mum says to son, "When the bus driver asks how old you are, tell him that you're six, not seven. We'll save 10 cents that way." You know, they got on the bus, and the driver asks, "How old are you, son?" Little boy says, "I'm six, sir." The driver asks, "And when will you be seven?" Little child answers, "As soon as I get off this bus."
That's all we have for you this month, and we hope you found something of interest. Thanks for being with us, and we hope you will join in the callbacks, where callbacks are taken. The next IOTC news and information broadcast will take place on the first Monday of next month, on the same frequencies and at the same times as today, with the exception of January. If you have missed all a part of this broadcast, or you just want to listen to it again, it is available for download from the IOTC website. Simply go to www.rotc.org.au. Again, the website URL is www.rotc.org.au. On the right-hand side is the main menu. Click on VK3OTN Broadcasts and will be able to see the various times and frequencies of the VK3OTN. transmissions by all of our volunteers, provided of course a volunteer is available. Down towards the bottom of the page is the current and previous 5 broadcasts for you to listen to. Sometimes the relay station is an automated broadcast, for example, a repeater, when no operator is available to take callbacks. Other times the volunteer operator suffers from very heavy local queue iron, and callbacks are not always possible. Many operators need a small amount of time to switch from playing a recorded file to using a microphone. Please be mindful of this. This is VK3OTN signing clear from today's news and information session. 73 from the IOTC broadcast team.